Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The Paris terminal forecast is just giving warm sector conditions. The forecast at Le Bourget from 1500 to 1900 is giving 200 degrees 18 knots, 6 miles visibility, 7-8 stratocue at 1500 feet. Orly and Beauvais will be much the same.
I see it.
There you go. Don't worry, you haven't entered a time portal. That was audio from one of the very early aviation weather forecasts on RTE television. And RTE began broadcasting Met Air and weather forecasts in 1948 on the wireless. And over the decades, changes in technology have dramatically transformed the way scientists bring us the news of the rain, sun, the hail and the wind. So to take us through just how different the job is today compared with yesteryear, I'm joined now in the studio by Joanna Donnelly, Met Air meteorologist, and on the phone by Gerald Fleming, former head of forecasting at the service, who retired in 2017. And you're both very welcome, Joanna and Gerald. Thank you for being with us. It's so interesting to hear that audio from way back when, but I just want to bring you and our listeners the earliest surviving audio of a weather forecast from Radio Air, and this was made in 1939.
The chief items of tonight's news are: weather will be mainly fair, but there will be local coastal fog and drizzle in the west and north. It will continue rather warm in all districts. Outlook for Saturday, similar.
Basic enough, really, in terms of information from Geraldine Plunkett there, Joanna. I mean, it's not the level of detail we're used to now.
Well, it's pretty much the same. It's coastal fog and mist in the northwest, and otherwise it'll be nice. Yeah, yeah.
You started with Met Air 29 years ago, am I right?
That's right, 29 years in August, yeah.
And then you started presenting the weather forecast for TV in 2016?
Yep, that's right, yep.
What was it like moving into that area, into the TV and radio broadcast? It's a very different sort of skill set, was it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a gradual transition, obviously, over the development of the career. I did radio for about 14 years, I think, before I did TV. So with radio, obviously, you know, you're trying to hold the attention of the listener beyond the first two words that you say, because of course they start to drift away. So it's really very important to get your story and your text and your script and nail it down tight. And then I went into TV, and Gerald was my mentor there. He was my trainer. And the first thing I noticed was I have pictures.
Yes. But you have to describe what people are seeing.
It's a different skill set. Mm. But with pictures, of course, you've got that added dimension to your forecast. So the hardest part was learning the physicality, to actually be physical in the studio and represent yourself and the weather in the, you know, pointing in the right place.
Right, because you've got the screen behind you, so you've got to learn how to use that. Maybe just describe how that works.
Well, there isn't a screen behind you, of course. It's a blue screen, so we're picked out by technology. Anything that isn't blue is removed, and then we see the map behind us. But we're looking at what the charts that we've produced. So we've produced the charts that you're looking at on the screen behind us. So we know what's coming. Well, every time we click a chart on, move a chart on, we know what's coming next because we've made it. But we can't necessarily see it because it's not there. When I turn around, there's nothing there. I'm doing here on radio. You can't see it. So you have to learn exactly where you are in relation to the map and how to point your hand. And of course, because you're picked out of by IT, by a computer, you have to make sure that your hand doesn't disappear when you turn it sideways. And there's all these little nuances to learn.
So you can't turn your hand right side on. It has to be flattish.
Exactly that, because it disappears. I didn't know this. So this was something that Karina Buckley had to teach me. And that was hard.
Yeah. And Gerald, for you, was it hard to adapt to that?
Well, I had started a long time before that, when we basically had cardboard charts and a couple of cameras and camera operators and so on. So over the time, that moved into a fully automated studio where we had very basic computer graphics at the beginning. And then, as Joanna has described, there are the much more sophisticated computer graphics which developed through the, I suppose, through the 1990s and the noughties.
Well, listen, you mentioned the cardboard charts. So will you go back and tell us what that was like and what it looked like for the people who don't remember?
Sure. Well, I started in, I think my first TV broadcast was in 1984, 1985, around about then. So we had these charts. We had two charts, which are done out in kind of blues and greens, where we physically drew the isobars, the high pressures, the low pressures, one for today, one for tomorrow. Then we had a satellite picture, which was taken on a kind of a special machine called a MuFax, which was a horrible kind of almost like kitchen paper that you use in cooking. And then you had this map of Ireland on which you put in roundy temperatures and wind directions. And there was words. We didn't have symbols in those days. We had words. So there was a big box in RTE Graphics full of weather words like sunny or cloudy or misty or fog or cold or whatever. And inevitably, of course, the ones called cloudy and cold were all grubby and stuff because they were used almost every day. But the sunny ones were pretty pristine, but they were used occasionally too. So we picked out the weather words and somebody from the graphics people came down and kind of lined them up on the chart with their T-squares and got them nice and level and that sort of thing.
Right, and you had your pointer as well, didn't you?
We had our pointer, which was actually a baton from the symphony orchestra, I believe, liberated from the orchestra premises in some way. And we used that to kind of point at the chart. So when I started, we were in the same studio as News. So the news readers in those days, people like Anne Doyle, of course, and Michael Murphy and so on, were at one end of the studio and we were at the other end. The cameras were in the middle. So after the news, while they played the out jingles and so on, the cameras switched around and turned on us. And we did our little piece. Mm-hmm. But we had to be in the studio right through the news. So you were standing there for 20, 25 minutes as the news was being played out, kind of going through the stuff in your head.
And standing there very quietly and hoping that the words wouldn't drop off the chart, making a noise.
All of those things, indeed.
I can imagine. So then when things changed and went to closer to what we see now, it must have been hard to adapt, was it?
It was certainly a big change because we went into an automated studio. I think we were possibly the first people in RTE television to actually use a completely automated studio where there was just, I think, two fixed cameras, one fixed on us and another fixed on the satellite image. And then we had the graphics, which we prepared on an old BBC microcomputer. So they were fairly basic. They weren't much different to what we had done before with the cardboard and so on, except that they were actually symbols now rather than words. But again, as Joanna has said, we prepared all that ourselves. So we prepared a sequence, typically not very long, maybe five or six charts. So we sat at a desk with a monitor beside us and the monitor showed the charts and we could switch to bring the monitor full screen for the viewer with a kind of a foot switch, I think. So we had hand switches and foot switches and things. We were like an airline pilot trying to moderate the whole thing while we were actually speaking. But yeah, it worked after a while.
Yeah, the foot pedal is an interesting thing to get used to. I remember doing auto cue in a London studio using a foot switch and thinking that it was like operating a sewing machine.
Make sure
that the pressure was just right. Well, I have a clip here now. This is from 1988. This is when the new computerised system came on stream. Let's have a listen.
Weather bulletins will now be longer, more frequent and will be presented using the most up-to-date graphic techniques. New weather data has been installed at the RTE complex to ensure the most efficient interpretation of information right up to broadcast deadlines. Before this, charts had to be ready and prepared by 4 p.m. Over the past 3 weeks, seasoned weather presenters from the BBC have been passing on some of their expertise. There will now be 5 weather presentations daily on RTE 1 and Network 2, all coming from a specially built new weather studio. The weekend will also see extended forecasts, a leisure forecast on Saturday to help you plan your weekend, and a long-term forecast on Sunday, giving the outlook for the whole week.
The ability of the Irish Met Service to give good weather forecasts has improved a lot over the last 10 years, but that improvement hasn't been fully reflected in what the end user, the viewer or the listener or whatever, has been getting, well, particularly in terms of television viewers. Mm-hmm. From now on, we'll have 4 or 5 forecasts a day on the television, and we'll be using these better graphics, and we'll be... It'll be possible to be more up to date because we have our weather office here now in Montrose, so we'll be getting the very latest information.
That's you, Gerald, ending that clip there from 1988 explaining the new system. It sounds like the workload increased a lot too, did it?
Well, we changed from having a situation where we used to work our full shift in the forecast office in Glasnevin and then in the evening go over and do the weather after the 9 o'clock news as a sort of an extra bit to the end of the day, to having a full shift located in RTE Montrose. So our job for today was to go to RTE and prepare and present the various weather bulletins. So it was a complete change of organisation as well as technology. Mm-hmm. And as I had said there, allowed us to give far more broadcasts. And it was a step change really in how we did things. Yeah.
Joanna, I suppose what we see has changed, but also the data that you're working with has changed a lot as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest change that has happened in my time here, in my career. I was trying to remember the word MUFAX. So when I started, we had the satellite still came in on MUFAX and only maybe four or five times a day, or maybe once an hour. Or now, if it was gone for 5 minutes, we'd be, where's the satellite? How do we live without it? And now the data is coming in, the model data is updated every hour now. So that's a new thing that's only happened in the last year. We've got new models all the time. The grid points, that's the scale of the model, is getting tighter and tighter. We're mapping more. So it's the scale of the data that is getting, that's the change. That's where the real change is coming in mm-hmm. now. And hopefully that means we're delivering a better or a more accurate service.
Well, I suppose it means as well you've got more decisions to make about what you are presenting, because you have so much data that you've got to boil down into a very short period.
Well, it's himself, Gerald Fleming, told me 3 points. Make sure you've got your 3 most important things. You've only got 2 minutes and you've only got the attention of the audience for a very short time too. So you have to make sure that you're getting the critical and the crucial information across. So you have, as you say, a lot of data there, but maybe at this point, the mist in the middle of the summer, in the middle of the night, isn't all that important. Maybe we can drop mist at this time of year, bring it back in the autumn when it's crucial, but not necessarily. So those are the decisions that we have to make. There's a huge amount of information that we have to get across to our audience, but we need to make sure that we're getting the critical stuff mm-hmm. and that they are getting the critical messages.
Yeah, that still holds true, Gerald, doesn't it? That you've got probably 3 points that you can make or that you can aim to get across in that bulletin.
Absolutely. If people remember 3 things at the end, that then you're doing well. And you know, Joanna has put it very succinctly there. And we learned that, I suppose, from people like Bill Giles and that from the BBC, who came over and trained us back in the 80s, that you really need to focus on what's the story and how there's lots of facts in weather, there's lots of data, but making a narrative story from it so that people can remember some of it, because people don't remember lots of facts if you just throw them at them. You need mm-hmm. to make a narrative out of it. That's part of the task, if you like. And you do that partly through how you construct the graphics, and obviously partly how you tell the story.
And listen, I would imagine as well, once you make that decision to go on screen yourself as a scientist, that your life changes an awful lot. Like, particularly for you, Gerald, I remember there being a big story about the Wink. It was a huge story at the time. But you wouldn't have been used to that level of attention, I'm sure, in your normal working life.
No, it's fair to say that, you know, most of us, when we go into study physics and mathematics, don't envisage a future for us where we're so much in the public eye, you know, unless we're like Brian May or somebody from Queen who studied physics and then went into rock music. Yeah. We don't have that sort of ahead of us, most of us. So, yeah, it is a change. But look, it's part of the job. You're a public persona. You're representing Metairn. You're also representing RTE, obviously, as being part of the public service broadcaster. So, you know, you have to take that.
Yeah, and you have to expect that you're going to have that level of attention. Of course, Joanna, there was the time as well, you were broadcasting on the night that it was announced that Prince had died. And you made that, I won't say quip, but it was just a line that reflected, I suppose, the shock that people were feeling that this had happened, when you said about the purple rain. Was that an instantaneous thing?
Well, as Gerald said earlier, they used to have to stay in studio for the whole news bulletin. No, we have to be there 10 minutes before we're due to go on air. So we're in the news, in our studio, watching the news as it is mm-hmm. being. And
you're on your own in there.
And we're on our own in there. So I was standing there all mic'd up. And now I was born in the 1970. Prince was my formative years singer. He was very important to me. And particularly that song was very, very important to me. It's my favourite song. It was really emotional connection. And here I am standing in the news and I'm told Prince is dead. I nearly died. And I managed to get through the bulletin. There have been a few occasions where I've struggled to get through a bulletin. Now, once you start, you're OK. But if the final news item is very emotional or very serious or important, you know, you have to pull yourself together and deliver. And there's been a few occasions where I've had to take a breath to get emotionally stable before. And that time, all the way through the whole broadcast, all I was thinking was, Prince is dead. at the end.
But you're human, yeah, you know, and to reflect that is quite normal as well, because you do have to develop a little rapport with the audience, Gerald, isn't it? That's something that, you, I'm sure, learned too in your time.
Oh, absolutely. That human connection that you have with the viewer or the listener is key to getting any communication, is a kind of a person-to-person thing. And we have a sort of an odd role as we're not newsreaders who are reading effectively scripts prepared by others often, but I'm going to put their own piece on them, but they're still, they can't be emotional, as Joanna has talked about. They're there to deliver information. A reporter, an actor is doing a different sort of job. Our job is, we have to be there ourselves as our personalities have to be there, because if we had no personality, we wouldn't communicate. And yet we have to have, if you like, the objectivity of the scientist as well. So we have to meld those two things.
All right. Well, we have people getting in touch with us saying that they still miss the nod and the wink, Gerald. And it's lovely to catch up with you again. Gerald Fleming there and Joanna Donnelly, thank you both.